The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey, y'all, it's Paul with the How to Hunt Turkeys podcast. This is a re-release of the episode that went live just a few days ago. This is the Scott Ellis episode. I had a ton of you guys reach out and say that you couldn't hear Scott when he was calling. The software that I used to kind of edit the podcast muted all of that. And I didn't realize that until you guys started emailing me on Instagram and go wild. So thank you for doing that. So this is, I'm gonna give you a fair warning. Some of it gets a little loud. So if you're listening in your car, in your truck, or you got headphones on and Scott gets ready to call on some of those excited calling sequences, it does get a little loud, but man, is it good. It doesn't last too long. You're gonna love this episode with all of the calling, owl hooting, crow calling, excited hen yelps, everything that Scott did. Freaking amazing. Scott was just a masterful episode, and what a great caller. So thank you guys for reaching out to me, telling me about the issues with the audio. Really appreciate that. Continue to reach out, subscribe to this podcast, tell your friends about it, click that plus button, whatever app you're listening to the show on. We got some YouTube stuff coming your way. Turkeyseason.com goes live March 4th. That's the kickoff turkey season in this country. We're just a few days away from turkey season, being able to kill turkeys here in Southern Florida. What a time. What a great time of year. Looking forward to that. So turkeyseason.com goes live. Thanks to our sponsors, Go Wild, timegowild.com. Click, check them out on the Android or Apple app, and Wicked North, wickednorthgear.com. Get those turkey kill kits and those beard hangers coming. You're going to need them after listening to this turkey podcast. Appreciate you guys. I'll see you again here next week. I think there's a bigger culture that surrounds turkey hunting than there is deer hunting. Yeah. So I don't know if
I would agree. Yeah. I've always compared it to turkey hunting. I love to deer hunt, but deer hunting to me is so one dimensional. It's like bowling and golf. Deer hunting is bowling. You've got two lanes, you got 12 pins, and you're trying to knock them down, and you only have a certain lane you can roll with. And that's deer hunting, because you can only control your destiny so much with a bowling ball. But when you get on a golf course, you have to chip, you have to putt, you have to have short, you have to have a long game, a mid iron game. I'm a golfer. I mean, and it's three dimensional. And that's what I love about turkey, and the fact that deer do half of their communication, three quarters of their communication is by scent alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They do vocalize, but not like turkeys, not like turkeys do.
Oh, God.
And
no. Yeah,
that's why I've always been enamored with calling turkeys, is because you're communicating in detail. If you know how to do it, you really can carry on a conversation, and you can exploit their emotions, and you can heighten their sense of emotion, or you can tone them down just by communication. Like, I'm yelling at you right now, Paul, or I'm like, you're talking to your dog, hey, honey, I love you so much, sweetie. And you do that, yeah, that same inflection you can put in a turkey call if you take the time to be better at it. But anyways, we're probably getting some good stuff right here. This bullshit.
So I was going to say, I'm going to put that in the show. I'm going to introduce you, but that's going to be the first half of the show, because that was great. That was a great explanation of turkey calling. And I didn't even need for it to get that good. That was well done. So, so on this episode of the How to Hunt Turkey podcast, we got, I got Scott Ellis, just a wonderful, wonderful turkey hunter, wonderful man. Scott and I've gotten to know each other a little bit over the last year. So Scott, thanks for your time. This is podcast number two, for you and I, man. And, I really appreciate your time tonight.
I'm happy to be here, my friend. I love talking turkey with you, and I love talking and talking tactics and getting it out there. And hopefully somebody can listen to this and take a little bit of something from you and be successful. And I love that.
Yeah. Well, good, man. So just give the listeners just a little rundown of who you are, where you're from, and kind of your role within the turkey hunting culture and industry, and where you fit in with Woodhaven and all that good stuff.
Oh gosh. Yeah, man. I started off outdoor riding many, many, many years ago, and got on a pro staff with a company called Quaker Boy Game Calls. A lot of people know it, back in about 25 years ago. And was, like I said, started competing on stage, competition turkey calling, and just kind of found my way into the industry just by winning calling contests, again, being an outdoor rider. I love to ride. Now it just is so time consuming and you have to think way too hard to do it anymore. But but I used to enjoy riding. And now we have YouTube. You know, YouTube wasn't big 25 years ago. Now we have YouTube. We have social media. We have all these platforms that you can talk turkey with people and you can, you know, kind of teach the masses. That's something I've always embraced with my turkey adventures, is just teaching people to call better, to strategize on turkeys better. And you know, I have my DVDs, Mouth Call Magic 1 and 2. We have the app, Turkey Tech, that teaches the art of calling and setup and just how to be a better turkey hunter. And that's where I think I found my niche. Had a lot of success on the stage competing. You know, I've won some Grand National titles and whatnot. On the back end of that whole deal, sidebar there, but I'm kind of on the back end of the competition calling thing. And now just enjoying time in the woods with friends and family and hunting turkeys, or hunting anything for that matter. But obviously we're talking about turkeys, and that is my first love, is turkey hunting. So, but yeah, you mentioned Woodhaven. I'm bouncing around on you a little bit, but I'm the pro staff manager for Woodhaven. I'm brand ambassador with Apex Ammunition. I'm with Thermacell and Mossy Oak. Just enjoy the time with and the fellowship of being in the woods, and the art of calling and hunting wild turkeys has always been my first love, and I love it. And I love that I can take it to the industry to some level and you know, and reap the benefits of meeting great people and getting some good invites to hunt some great property and hunting some public land with great friends across the country. And you meet up with people. It's just a great brotherhood. You know, the whole turkey hunting culture is just a brotherhood, and most everybody are really cool people, and they enjoy and embrace each other's success and love sharing that success and what made them successful. And that kind of is a caveat to me going back where I was saying, oh, I just love what I do instructionally to help people and try to put as much out here, just like these podcasts, that somebody can take a tip and run with it and hear something. They say, I got to try that. And they tried it and it works. And then you get a message on Instagram or on Facebook and go, hey man, I heard you on so-and-so podcast, or I saw your YouTube video, and I did that crap and it worked, man. I killed that turkey. It worked. And that, there's no better sense of pride, man. That makes you want to thump your chest like Tarzan. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned that. As soon as I'm done with this statement, I want everyone to hit pause on this podcast. I want you to hop over to the App Store and I want you to get the Turkey Tech app. I got that. When did you come out with that? What, 4 or 5 years ago, I feel like?
It's been a few, three or four probably. Yeah.
Yeah. That app made me a better turkey caller, without a doubt. And so I'd been hunting turkeys at that time for probably 15 years. So I was proficient at calling and killed some birds. Right. That was one of those apps that I could listen, especially when I got in, I wanted to get into the more complex calling sequences and calls. That was one of the things that made me a better turkey hunter, because the way that it's packaged up, it's like, okay, this is a call, this is a tree yelp, this is what it sounds like from a turkey, and this is what it sounds like from you, Scott Ellis, making that call. And it was, so I was able to, it's a damn good app. So do yourself a favor, if you listen to this, you want to be a better turkey caller, hit pause, go get that app. You will not regret it. You will not regret it. Single-handedly, I mean, the number one thing that made me a better turkey caller. So thank you for that. That's a free plug, Scott. Don't forget that. Stay humble, friend. No,
I appreciate it. $4.99, people. This is the price of a cappuccino. It's, I mean, seriously.
Yep. Man, it's worth every freaking penny. So good deal. So when did you start hunting turkeys? We'll just get a little background on like turkey hunting beginnings
sure
for you?
Oh gosh, I think this is my 37th season. I was about 11 and I'm 48, so that sounds about right. Yeah, I think I was 11 and that would have been 1985. Yeah, right before Mossy Oak and Real Tree was launched is when I started turkey hunting.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So we're now, you're in Florida now. Are you born and raised in Florida?
Born and raised, unfortunately. I'm not proud to call Florida home, but it is home.
Fair enough, man.
Yeah, but yeah, born and raised.
So did you grow up hunting Osceolas down south, or are you up a little farther, cutting your teeth on the Easterns?
No. I hunting public land Osceolas. And I'm not south zone. I'm central zone. I'm not south of Highway 70, which is the line of demarcation. But I grew up hunting public land. I didn't have places to hunt when I was a kid. I wasn't poor, but I mean, we didn't have high dollar hunt leases, and you know, leases were expensive 30 something years ago, just like they are now. And they're even worse now, yeah. Of course, with the Osceola becoming such a gem for people, you know, a destination spot, if you will, to kill a turkey. But you know what cut my teeth on those pressure birds and those Osceolas in the pastures and swamps and oak hammocks of Central Florida, I think is what honed my skills at a very young age at how to kill any turkey anywhere and put a plan together. And it made me the turkey hunter I am today, without a doubt. I mean, I think you can, I don't want to step on people's toes, but I think if you grew up in more privileged type hunting, you know, less pressured hunting, I'm not saying you can't kill turkeys or you're not proficient turkey hunter, but I know that it made me hunt harder, hunt longer, learn to call better, learn to strategize more, and have a very, very deep bag of tricks is what I always called it. A big old deep bag of tricks.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to say it. You know, you publicly, and that's same thing. I don't have primo private property that's, you know, unpressured turkeys. I'm hunting public lands of Ohio and, you know, the other states that I'm fortunate enough to hunt, you know, with me and, you know, sometimes 100 other people on the in the same area. Right. So yeah, you definitely learn to scratch out an existence as a public land turkey hunter. And it's just as the sport's gotten more popular, you know, you've got more and more people coming into it. So you just have to kind of adapt to that. So
It's not even that the turkeys are on public ground. There's always a big debate, public versus private. I didn't finish my statement, kind of cut myself off about hunting less pressured birds are just easier to hunt because they don't get the human pressure. Public land birds aren't necessarily any harder to kill than any other bird. It's just the contact with humans that I think causes them to be so much more skittish, gobble less, be harder to call, be harder to move on, harder to step on. But they're just more skittish, if you will, in my opinion. And you have to, yeah, it taught me to call a lot less at a younger age, even though, you know, I learned to call pretty proficiently very young and got really good on a mouth call very young. It's still, and that makes a difference. We can talk about that at some point because I've been preaching it forever and ever, and I will continue till my grave to preach that more realistic calling will kill more turkeys. But that said, It's just I learned to tone it down. No matter how good you call in certain situations, you have to tone it down, scratching the leaves, clucking for a whine, soft yelping, you know, not be too aggressive. And then there's times I've hunted public ground turkeys where I did get the chance to get aggressive and the bird allowed me to, because I wasn't surrounded by 100 people. It just, you know, depends on the day. It depends on the management area. It depends on the ground, the state ground, the federal ground, whatever. There's always a lot more variables in my opinion in hunting public ground. There's a lot more things that can happen, unknowns, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. I'll tell you what, I want to, on the back end of this, after the little calling tutorial here, I definitely want to talk some turkey strategy, because toning it down, that's a hard lesson to learn. And I think for a lot of people, me included, you learn that by what? Failure. That's right. So, that's sometimes that's the best way to learn. So let's talk about calling, man. So we're
talking basic. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. So let's start out. You know, I get out of my truck and I'm a turkey hunter. The first thing I really want to do in the morning, I guess, is locate turkeys. So on the front end of a hunt, you're probably gonna do a lot of out calling, maybe some crow calling. So talk about timing for ripping off a hoot owl call in the morning.
Well, you know, it's a great topic to kick right into it because I'm the guy that gets my owl hooter or my voice and will hoot well before dark or before daylight, excuse me. I will hoot in the dark with the slight chance that that bird will give his location away, and I've got a lot more cover of darkness to try to move on. And it doesn't work all the time. Now, I will say this, just a sidebar, interesting little tidbit. When I was a kid hunting Osceolas in Florida, those birds would gobble at 5 o'clock in the morning. Does not happen that way anymore. Evolution to me and pressure and predation have definitely caused those turkeys to gobble when it gets lighter and lighter. It seems like every year they gobble later and later. It just seems to be the case. But
they can see.
So they can see. Yep. And back in the day when I was a kid, buddy, you'd be ripping off owl calls or at you know, not a crow so much in the dark, but definitely an owl at 5 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes, you know, very often they would gobble. Now, Miriams are the only exception. You can still get Miriams to gobble at any hour of the night or the morning. But outside of that, Easterns and even Rios are more susceptible to gobbling really, really early. But Easterns and Osceolas, not so much. And so I do owl hoot really early. And just with the chance, slight chance that he may give me that location, and I'll have a little more time and a little more ability to move and cover without having to just use terrain because it's starting to really break daylight where they can see. And for the listeners out there, we're going to talk about a barred owl. And I've got my Woodhaven Ninja owl call here that I designed with Woodhaven. And I'm going to start off with just an 8-note hoot. Who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all? Or y'all, actually. It's y'all. It's not you all. It's y'all. But but I'll give the 8-note hoot, and I'll give it to you real quick with a Woodhaven Ninja owl. And I'll listen. And I'll give it again. Add a little flair on that one, those little single notes at the end of the 8-note. And I'll listen. And sometimes they're ripping right off of the bat, and you don't have to do much more. And what I will do is if you end up getting a locator call and you start getting proficient with it, experiment with screaming, experiment with laughing, getting louder, getting higher pitched with the call, because sometimes I love giving this tip away or tip out is that you have to get aggressive with your locator calls. And I'll go into the crow call in a minute as well. I mean, you can do that 8-note hoot and that bird just might not gobble, but now I might not have heard anything. So I'm going to get excited and I'm going to throw a scream in there. And this is what and the Ninja Owl will scream. I don't know. Not all hooters are made alike, but the Ninja Owl will scream. And it's just a single high pitched note that the barred owl does. Not super common, but it's like it's almost like a coyote howl for Miriams. They will gobble at this one. They won't gobble at a lot. And so I'll give them a scream. And this is the scream of a barred owl. That's the scream. It's just a high, shrill pitch sound. And then they'll go into like a hitched roll note, if you will. It doesn't really have a name, but they'll scream and then go into this note. And this also adds a little flair, a little more aggression that could jerk a gobble out of one. It goes like this. And that adds a little bit more and you listen. And then if that doesn't work, then I may go into a little longer laughing sequence. So I'll hit something like this. Hit something like that right there, and that will sometimes jerk a gobble out of one. So just don't be afraid to experiment with it and make different sounds other than the 8-note barred owl. Just be versatile and get proficient enough with the call to be able to make the other sounds. It can make a difference in locating and not locating.
I will second what you said. We talked last year on a show, and you said the same thing. Get a little aggressive. Get a little loud. Get a different sound coming out of the owl hoot other than the 8-note. I was hunting in Tennessee, highly pressured birds. I was on a great spot. I was out on this ridge and there's all this terrain and your features. And I'm like, there's gotta be turkeys here. And I've been hooting and the sun's up on its way up. And I'm like, man, nothing's out. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try that scream. And man, it was just like, I hadn't moved. You know, I'd been just walking the top of this ridge. And I hit that scream and it was like the freaking holler erupted, man. And there was like four turkeys there. I'm like, well, boys, no. I've been standing here for an hour waiting for you guys. So,
and you know, the beautiful part about that is you truly shocked them into gobbling, shot gobble 101. And they may not gobble again, but at least you knew and you know they're there. And that's when, if they don't gobble again, you know that you can camp out in that area, set up, and just do some blind calling, and with a chance of killing something. And that's a great, that's a great feeling. I do that a lot with a tube call in the spring, because I get birds to gobble with my tube call that I don't generally get to gobble at anything else. And they may only gobble one time and give you what we call a courtesy gobble, but at least you know he's there. And if he doesn't answer me again, I'll set up, start scratching the leaves, clucking and purring, not being too aggressive. And then if that doesn't work, then I might try cutting at him real hard. We could go into tactics. We're already diving off into tactics.
Oh,
tactics,
man, I love it. So I'm going to – so my first turkey hunting season, 2007. So I started out calling in 2007. I cannot freaking roll my R's on the end of it, on the end of that 8-note hoot, that little growl or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yes. So just there, do that. I'm going to shut up. That's how you do it. Give it to us one more time.
Okay, there's two ways of doing it. You can either flutter your tongue, or you can vibrate your uvula, that little piece of skin that hangs in the back of your throat. Mm-hmm. God gifted me with the ability to go and just roll my tongue. And all I do is relax my tongue and then blow air across it. I'm using my voice so you can hear the vibration. And I just blow air across and it flaps. Now, if I do it, see, when I do my uvula, you can hear the vibration, but it's too fast. Okay. It'll work great for crow calling, but when I owl call, that was my uvula. Here's my tongue. Thank goodness I can roll my tongue, because I cannot get my uvula to slow down. I think mine's about 3 inches long, and just that's the reason why I can't get it to vibrate. Yeah, there's too much skin hanging down there.
So I can get it. That's about what mine sounds like. It's almost like an owl growl. Right.
Right.
And I will say it works, but
you cannot roll your tongue.
I cannot, man. And I've tried, and it drives me nuts. So I get that on the end of it. I'll give it that little, the laugh, you know, that real aggressive laugh, and then just go into like a short roll. And I mean, a lot of times, for me, I'll get that quick little, and it works. But I think that's one of those things. It's practice. You know, most people are going to get it. I'm just an idiot and can't.
No, you're not. There's a lot of people that cannot do either. They just can't. They don't. I'll explain it real fast. I mean, I don't want to go too far in the weeds, but it's take a deep breath and blow out until your cheeks fill with air. Like if you sit in your chair, like in the evening when you got home from work and you're tired, and you go, and your cheeks will fill up with air. But I'm okay. When you do that, let that air channel that air more across your tongue.
I'm gonna try using your throat.
I
am. Yeah, you hear. You can hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear your throat trying to vibrate. Mine does the same thing, and that's the only. And that's why I try. I teach people to purr to get the R, the rolling tongue, using that same method. That deep breath. Your cheeks expel with air. They fill up. You create a little back pressure, and that's how. I have taught a few people and got them to do it. So maybe we'll sit face to face sometime and I'll be able to watch what you're doing. And I can help you. But
yeah.
Anyways, not getting too far in the weeds, but that's the role for the R's on an owl or the purr on a mouth call.
Yeah. Okay. Now is an owl call. So I've done this. I saw some guys doing it on YouTube or TV years ago, owl hooting at like 11 o'clock in the morning and turkeys just shot gobbling. I mean, that's an effective tool, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'll hoot all day. I can get louder and more shrill on a crow call. So I will generally go to crow during that part, during the middle of the day, because I get louder and more shrill than an owl call.
Yeah.
I mean, that might, my hooter's pretty loud, but it's not as loud as a crow call. But
yeah.
So
let's talk about the crow call real quick.
Okay. Yeah. So crow call, I mean, great locator. Right? And I don't crow call in the dark just because that's unnatural to me. So that's unnatural. Right as that sun first peeks his little head right over that, just starts to crack light. I hear crows all the time right there, right well before any kind of real sun up, but that first crack of light. And I mean, it's loud, it's shrill, and you know, and you hear the crow fly over your head sometimes. He's just doing the basic calls. This is a Woodhaven real crow, and he's just doing the basic. And that's just. Your basic, excuse me, got a frog in my throat, basic crow sounds. Yeah, that might get a bird to gobble. You know, a really hot turkey might get him to gobble. But what we're going to do with what you can't do with your throat you don't flutter your tongue with a crow call. You do use that uvula. And when a crow call, I can do that, what you're doing, and you do that across the crow call, and it creates a good crow sound. Hear it come to life? Oh, yeah. That's the uvula. That's not my tongue. So you do that, and then you just really blast the air through it and get more aggressive, just like we talked about with the laughing, the screaming. Blow air to it and make a little longer sequence, and this will make the difference sometimes in when he gobbles and when he doesn't. And I'll get my throat clear. I'll get you some good crow calling, getting aggressive, using that gargle, that uvula roll. And then listen. And a little tip to give people when you're trying to feel like, when you feel like you're running out of air, open your mouth around the mouthpiece and inhale in between the blows. And there you go. And then you listen. And don't go too long because he might shot gobble in the middle of all that sequence. But that's a great little sequence. Just a and then listen, like a crow fight almost. And that will be what sometimes is the difference between a gobble and not a gobble.
Yeah.
And I use that all the way up into the day. Yep.
Okay.
All throughout the day.
Yeah. That's a really effective tool to pull a shot gobble out of turkey. So actually let's define what a shot gobble is for people.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we gotta not get too far ahead of ourselves with the advanced tactics. A shot gobble is when a bird gobbles at a train horn, at a clap of thunder, at a crow, at an owl. It's just a stimulus to a loud noise. It can be an air horn. It can be slamming your truck door, as the old boys say back in the old turkey hunt days. I just get out and slam a truck door and he gobbles. I honk the horn and he gobbles. But I think one thing I've developed over the years, yeah, all that will work, just loud noises. Thunder is amazing, actually. Best locator I've ever heard. You can use a duck call. You can use a goose call. Very effective. All over the U.S., I've done both of those. But something I think that happens with crows and owls is they're not mortal enemies, but they're not. They don't have that symbionts in the woods, if you will, the brotherhood in the woods. And I think a bird will hear a crow or an owl as a challenging, another bird challenging his dominance, if you will. And I think they will sometimes gobble. They're sometimes gobbling at an owl or a crow because they feel challenged. And that's just a theory. You can call me crazy, but that's a theory I've always said, because he's hearing another bird that has a loud voice and it's rashish sounding, and he wants to fire back and say, "No, sir, I'm the dominant one in the woods." And I think that happens, in my opinion, with a crow and an owl. So the other loud, shrill sounds, loud booming sounds, thunder, whatever, I think that's more of a shot gobble to me than actually an owl or a crow. So just my 2 cents on it.
Yeah, no, good 2 cents, I will say. So let's talk about turkey calling. Now,
okay.
one of the real interesting questions, and a lot of guys are different. When you're in the woods, you're out hooting, you know, you've got some gobbles, maybe not as close, you're working in. When do you start calling? So more from a tactical side, not sure. We'll get into the instructional side. Like, when do you start calling if you haven't heard anything with a shot, you know, with a locator call? When do you start actually making turkey sounds?
Oh, I mean, right when the sun's breaking. If I give all my best locator stuff and there's just nothing happening, I will actually get on my tube call and gobble. That's one of my last tricks in my very deep bag of tricks. It will be the gobble on my tube call. But I mean, going backwards a little bit, I'm trying to keep it. I keep thinking 101, Scott, 101, 101. Can we kind of go back and just say, okay, we've got him to gobble. And then for the new turkey hunter that's interested in doing this, what do I do next after
he gobbles on the roof? Yeah.
Okay. So I just wanted to give just a quick brief rundown. You locate him, slip into that turkey as tight as you feasibly can without bumping him. And that for somebody, some people may be 100 yards, maybe 200 yards, maybe 150, whatever you can do to use the darkness, if it's still dark enough, or the terrain. Hills, rolling hills, sides, cover, you know, thicker woods, you know, denser woods. Get as close as you can to him and then set down on the turkey. And then the game begins. Now we can kind of – I just want to give people that. Just set up and get a place that gives you a good vantage point. Don't let cover block you. Try to keep any obstacles out of your way. Don't get on the other, on the wrong side of a creek. Don't try not to get, put a fence between he and you or a ravine or any obstacle. And again, give yourself a good vantage point where you have shot lanes, you have places you can see. If it's open timber, then obviously that's advantageous for visibility, that you can see pretty good. But just don't forget that whole deal, because we'll talk hide the hen one of these days. And if we don't get too long winded, I might have to talk hide the hen. You know, my little tactic I came up with 25 years ago. Oh
yeah, I know that one.
That's, I should have patented that phrase and coined that phrase, hide the hen. But it's anyways. We'll get back to that.
Ship sailed.
yeah. Well, probably. I mean, I hear it's used a lot now. But at any rate, Burge Goblin, you set up on him, and then the sun starts breaking, and then you're saying, now you were saying, when do you call when you don't hear a bird? So do you want to go that direction, or do you want me to start doing some calling instruction now and just start off the roost and how you should talk to the bird on the roost?
Yeah, let's go with the scenario that we're talking about now. And you're owl hooting, you get a gobble, you've gotten into position, something that you feel as a new turkey hunter or turkey hunter is a good spot to be in. Where do you go?
From that point there, I'm going to let the light break just a little bit, and then I'm going to give him some real soft bubble clucks and what we call tree calling. And a bubble cluck is like a water dripping cluck. I'll demonstrate it on a mouth call, my new energy. What have new energy? I got to get my plugs in there, man.
Yeah,
my favorite split B call. Yeah, my new energy Woodhaven call, mouth call, one of my designs for those Woodhaven. And I'm going to give some bubble clucks and some tree calls and just try to make contact with him. That's going to sound like this on mouth call. This is just a hen waking up on the limb, and you're letting that gobbler know that there is a hen nearby. And it sounds like this. And that's the tree call. Just a soft little yelp, a couple of those little pips, those little bubble cluck. And you're just making contact with the bird. Hopefully he answers and he's fired up. Maybe he doesn't. Don't be discouraged if he doesn't. But if you did it as loud as I just did it, just like a very low level, and you're within 150 yards of him, 200 yards even, he's going to hear that, and he's going to know you're there. From there,
yeah, I think it's important to say that that's a soft call. That is not a loud call at all. Right. Even in the woods, that's a very, very mild sounding call.
Muffled, muted. Yep.
Yeah,
for sure.
Now for people, if they want to learn the intricacies of blowing air over the reeds, that Turkey Tech app, you go into detail about that, about the style. So we won't do any of that in this call. So guys, like I said, you can get that app. There are other resources to learn that. So we'll just go with more like the sound and the strategy of it.
Sure.
But in that Turkey Tech, you go over that in detail about air pressure and tongue placement and all that stuff. So
right. And I've got tons of YouTube videos on my channel, Hunt Quest, with my show, throwing that out there. But I got tons of instructions on YouTube as well. But so you make contact. Maybe I give him another two or three series of hen yelps or tree yelps. Only time I get a little more aggressive on the limb, throwing this out there as a tactic, is if I hear hens around him, with him. So at that point, I'm going to try to get the hens talking to me politely, just softly, civilly talking, having a nice little conversation to try to say, hey, I'm over here. I'm the newcomer. You know, sometimes curiosity gets the best of the hens and they'll fly down to you. Sometimes they do what? They fly the complete opposite direction. But we're just going to pretend for argument's sake that he does not have any hens. Couple series of tree calls, and then I'm just going to let it start getting light and let him do his thing. I'm going to listen to his gobbling frequency. I'm going to see if he's gobbling at owls, if he's gobbling at crows. I'm assessing his mood. Is he really, really fired up? Is he apprehensive, not very fired up? I'm just trying to get a feel for when the game begins is when his feet hit the ground, and we'll get to that here in a minute, but how I'm going to engage him once I get him on the ground, and that's when the games begin. So, tree calls, like I said, and then as it gets what I believe is good light, we're doing this with an audio, so we don't have any video recording, but I use a turkey wing. I have the primaries of a wing cut right at the wing joint, the bottom wing joint, and I put tape around the edge of it, makes like a little handle, and I carry two of them around in my vest, actually, for fighting purrs and for fly downs and stuff. And So at that point, I'm going to give a little fly down cackle and let him know that I have flown down with the wing beat. So he hears the wing slapping, and it simulates not only a turkey vocalization, it simulates the wing beats, the turkey sound, not just the vocalization. So I just do a quick little cackle on how I give it whenever I'm flying down to simulate the hens flying down. And that's the fly down cackle. It's a chopping crescendo effect call. It's very sharp single notes called almost like a cut note, if you would. And then it's just put into a crescendo. It starts high and then finishes low. Just like you heard me just do. And then
if you've got multiple hens in a tree, if you got four hens in the area, will all four of them cackle on the way down, or is it just kind of the dominant?
Sometimes they don't cackle at all. Sometimes I will do that same sequence. Here's a sidebar. We're on that hunted property, that pressured public land. I may not give any cackle. I just use the wings to simulate the wing beats. Now I might tree call or bubble cluck really, really soft just once or twice. And then I give the simulation with the wings, but not even do a flat on cackle. So it depends on the time of the year, where you're hunting. Sometimes it's just what you feel. Go with it. I mean, sometimes even on public land, I will cackle. I'll give a fly down. But generally, will hens always cackle? Absolutely not. I think more times than not, they don't cackle than they do, actually. But it's just one of those tricks in my little bag. I got my little trick bag, and that's one of the ones I definitely use. Yep.
Now I've used my hat before to do the fly down just out of desperation. I need to start saving turkey wings.
You should, man. It's a deadly tool. Deadly tool.
Yeah. All right. So let's go. You got him. You're bubble clucking, fly down cackle. You got someone on the ground. He's entertained. He's interested.
Okay. So he's flown there. Down.
Yeah. He's flown down. Yep.
And this is where we really start getting into the meat and potatoes of the 101 stuff, because this is where guys go, maybe they've been turkey in a couple of years and they've had some success or no success, but how much do I call to this rascal? Well, you know what? Call just enough to keep him moving towards you. So now what do you mean to keep him moving towards you to keep his forward progression, his march coming straight down your gun barrel? So how do you realize that without calling too much? Well, I will give a yelp. So he's hitting the ground. Let's get into some more basic stuff. I'm gonna just yelp to him. 101, yelping's probably killed more turkeys than any call that a turkey caller a turkey hunter has ever made. So I'm just going to give a basic, just a hen yelp. Once I know he's on the ground, see how he's gobbling, gauge his reaction. And it sounds like this. And that's the hen yelp. 5-6 notes. You can hear it. Most people will identify with that and know what the heck that is. And then from there, does he hammer? Does he not gobble? At that point, I'm just going to give him a minute, let him settle down after he's just flown out of the tree, let him get his scruples about him, get his faculties, get right with the turkey, get right with the woods, if you will. And then after that goes down, I'm going to check him basically. I mean, if he gobbled really well, all we can do here is run scenarios. It's so hard to say this is what you do, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. You know what I mean? It's hard to. So all we can do is kind of put the scenario that we're trying to teach somebody the basics out there. And that's, let's just say he gobbles and he's 125 yards away. Say you set up away from him 150, he flew a little towards you, or maybe he flew to the right of you, but he's not too far away. He's well within callable range. Your setup is good. And from there, I'm going to give him that first contact. He answers. And then I'm going to give him a few minutes. And then I'm going to check him. Give him 2 or 3 minutes. Don't just immediately start firing off at him when his feet hit the ground and you just want to hear him gobble. That's why we do it. We want to hear him gobble. That's why we're there. I mean, we're there to eat turkey nuggets. But at the end of the day, we're there to hear that gobble and see that, that drum and see him strut, And give him a few minutes and then just hit him with another yelp. And I'm not going to demonstrate it again. Yelp, 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 yelp. And listen, is he closer? Is he further away? If he's closer, this goes right back into what I told you when I say just give him enough to keep him coming to you. So say he closed and he's noticeably closer. Well, you don't have to, if that bird's that hot and he's ready to roll, you've just landed you've just hit the lottery. You know, he's closer, noticeably closer. Give him another 3 or 4 minutes. Check him again with a basic kill. Don't see, this is where we could go so far in the weeds, brother. I love talking this stuff because when you can cluck and purr and you can cut and you can fight and purr and you can jake you up and you can gobble, when you do all these sounds, these are all those tricks in that big old deep bag of tricks I talk about all the time. Don't get advanced. Don't get crazy. And don't start. Maybe you're an advanced turkey hunter that's listening to this right now. Don't throw all your tricks out there on the table, your trump cards right off the bat. Just stick with the basics. Then you have those in hold if you need them when he does hang up. Fair enough. You follow what I'm saying? Oh, okay. Yeah. So this bird's closing. I'm going to give him another yelp. He's closing. I'm going to give him another yelp. And after he's getting to what I'm saying, 75 yards, I'm going to go quiet. I mean, I've killed turkeys. We've all done it. If you've hunted longer than a few years, you yelp 3 or 4 times and he's dead right off the roost. Doesn't happen as often as we'd like it to happen, but it can't happen. So now you called yelp 3 or 4 times. He's closing. He's moving towards you. You don't have to call too much. Don't overcall him. If you overcall him, there's a very good chance he'll stand his ground and he'll get stubborn and want you to come to him. Always remember that a bird, generally a gobbler, gets the hens to come to him. But now gobblers do cover ground. Obviously, we call them up a lot, right? They do cover ground when they're in the right mood. They will come to the hen. But in general, when they hang up, that's the bird being stubborn and being what's a little more natural. And he just struts and shows off and he calls up the ladies himself. So this bird comes right on in. Boom. We're master turkey hunters. I yelped 4 times, called him right off the roost and killed him and he's dead. Okay. Now let's throw another quick scenario out there. Let me throw 2 spins on another scenario where he's gobbling good, but he's not closing the distance. He's not coming forward. That's when I'm going to yelp at him for a while, like I just did, 3 or 4 sequences. He's not acting right. He's answering, but he's not closing. That's when I might throw 4 or 5 cuts in with that yelp and get a little more excited with that yelp. And that I will demonstrate is I will get a little aggressive and try to charge him up and get him to break. Again, don't overcall him. Don't give him too much too soon. Give him little doses and give him silence in between those little doses. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So I'm going to cut 3, 4, 5 times and then go into an excited yelp. Just like that. We'll do it one more time. Just a little sharp cut note. And then listen. And then give him a little bit of silent treatment. Give him a little dose like that and then give him a second. He gobbles. I'm sure he'll gobble at that if he's gobbling well at you, okay? And give him 3 or 4 or 5 minutes and then check him. Sometimes that breaks him right there. Sometimes that's all it takes is that little more excitement to get in his head, get in his helmet, and then he breaks. And then whenever you get him coming, then you can tone it back down to basic yelps. And then you can put that cutting in your back pocket until you need it again to get him fired up again. You follow where this is all about exploiting his mood based on the vocalizations, what we talked about at the start of the podcast. It's using the sounds, their voice, the inflections, and the excitement level in their voice to either excitement to get them fired up we're going to go the different direction here in just a second. And then, and he comes in and then shuts down on you and he hangs up. We're going to go quiet or we're going to cluck and purr. So that got him fired up. That broke him. You yelp him all the way to the gun barrel and you kill the turkey. Now, in that whole series, you may have to cut louder and longer at him just to keep him coming. But it all depends on those little doses and then silence and then checking. Little doses of calling. When I say little doses, I mean a little bit of calling, a little bit of silence, and then checking. And then that's how you – but don't just sit there and yelp at him profusely for 5 minutes. That's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to – the silent treatment is just like cat – it's cat and mouse. Curiosity killed the cat. It's the same philosophy. So that bird, we killed him too. So we've killed 2 so far. We're on a roll now. We did it. We did the basic stuff and it killed 1.
What a season.
We're tagged out right off the bat. No, we got a little aggressive. That broke him. Again, you may even get more aggressive to break him if that didn't work. And then at some point, don't overdo it. Okay. You get a little more aggressive and then you shut it back down and say, no, that's, I don't want to overcall him. Let's reel it back in. That's when we're going the different direction here. And I'm going to give him some silence, 5-10 minutes of silence. Okay. And then I'm going to start doing some softer stuff. I'm going to tone it back down to play coy and shy with him. And now we're going to do what's called the purr, cluck and purr and the whine of a hen turkey, and it's just it's simulating a hen feeding, and these are the sounds that they make when they feed. It's almost like, say you did that excited stuff, put this in perspective, and it didn't break him, and then you're like, it's like a woman that you're a guy's talking to a girl, trying to get a number. Okay, I'm trying to pick my words here. He's trying to get the digits. He's trying to get a number. A girl, and
you seen this beard girl?
The bearded girl? No, I don't follow the bearded girl.
No, I said, have you seen this beard girl? You see this thing?
Oh, have you seen this beard? Oh, exactly. Yeah. There you go. G-rated. Yep. Yeah. And so you get it's a guy, and the girl's being really aggressive, and she's being, you know, really sexy and getting his attention. And then she's like, nah, not so much. You know, I'm just not really feeling it. In my mind, that's what you're doing when you fire one up and then you reel it back down and just start clucking and purring. It's like, you got me all excited, big boy. I heard you gobbling your brains out over there, and I'm not going over there to you. So I'm going to lose interest now and go back to feeding and not pay you any attention. And that's in my mind what I'm doing, again, trying to exploit his emotions. You get him all fired up, and then you shut him down. He's like, whoa, 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 you leave me hanging, woman? What's going on here? So... without further ado, some clucking and purring for you. And this is,
let's go.
This is when he's you got excited. He came in some halfway in, and then he hung up on you. Okay, so we're going to cluck and purr. I'm going to cluck and purr. A little whine. And that's clucking and purring. And if I can move, I will scratch in the leaves and just simulate a feeding hen. Sometimes that breaks them, and game over, and boom, you just killed it. We just killed three. We're 3 for 3, just like that.
What a team! What a turkey!
I mean, we are that good, people. We're that good. So there's another scenario where you fired him up, didn't work, so you shut him down. And then one of the most successful tactics I've ever used, when none of it worked, and he's out there strutting in his strut zone back and forth. Shut up, completely shut your calling down. It takes more discipline than anything I ever do in the turkey woods. And for 95% of turkey hunters, if they tell you it's easy for them to do, they're either not very proficient at a calling or they're lying. Just shutting up when you have him there and you know he's fairly close and he's not quite gun range, but just going quiet for like 15 minutes. I mean, just be listening for that drum. Sometimes they'll gobble on their own when you go silent. And when they gobble on their own when you go silent, that's when you really got to – okay, talk tonight. That's when you really have his attention, in my opinion. And I found that to be true many, many times. When you have one going and then he doesn't break and come in and you end up shutting it down on him and going silent, they can't stand it. Now, caveat to that is don't go silent for longer than I would say maybe 15, 20. Without maybe giving him a little yelp and trying to check him again, because I have had them lose interest and walk off when you went completely silent. So that's something to consider, but don't be scared to use it. And if you have no success with it after, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes, then go ahead and give him a little yelp and see if you can check him. And I've done that. And then that bird gobbled and he was 200 yards away when he was at one time, 75 yards away.
Yeah.
And that's a crappy feeling, I can tell you.
Yeah. So if you go silent, if you got, I feel like the first couple of scenarios, those are fun to talk about, right? We'll play radio. I feel like a lot of the time you're going to have that bird that's not ready to come in, not ready to die yet, whatever phrase you want to use. So if I'm giving him that silent treatment, are you scratching the leaves? Are you,
that's a great point. Yeah, I will take my wing and just kind of scratch and tickle leaves and stuff, and make scratching simulations like you're saying. Maybe even do like a little, I've actually taken my wings and tapped them together. Like she just kind of stood up and flapped her wings or something. Just a turkey sound that's not a vocalization. But I like using turkey noises and not necessarily turkey vocalizations. That's been very, very successful as well.
Yeah. Now, is there, and this is a really high level question. We're going to jump. And this is a very selfish question because I want to know. So I'm going to ask it. If you've got like just this super stubborn turkey and you're doing all your things, we're going to get into more of the bag of tricks, but is there ever a moment in that battle back and forth if you can, without being seen, will you get up and move away from that, Tom?
Absolutely. Great question. Yeah. That's a great question. Absolutely. I like when you lead me into you feed me these questions.
It's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite moves, man. I love absolutely. Doing it. Yeah.
Repositioning is, if you can move, I mean, 100%. I do it all the time. I mean, you watch anybody on that knows their salt on turkey killing turkeys. Yeah, you can sit in one spot all day and kill a turkey eventually, but if you're engaging one like that though, and he's just not closing, go quiet. Check him with locator calls. Don't use hen calls when you reposition. Always keep that in mind. And if he doesn't gobble at the locator, I would still suggest not to use a hen call, especially if you're going around him, making a berth around him, or going directly away from him, or you know what I mean. But hopefully he gobbles at your locators, and that way you're not giving away. He doesn't. You're not giving the idea that the hen's just walking around him or whatever. Now, caveat. I love that word. If you walk away from him and you're hunting in tandem, you can have your buddy walk behind you and call 100 yards behind you. And very often that we've seen that. That's worked a million times over the years. But if you're just by yourself, I would discourage hen calling as you're repositioning. I mean, because all you're doing is giving the illusion that she's just walking away from him or walking around trying to get a different angle. I like, if I do anything, I reposition, set up, call, and we're getting in the weeds again here, and even sound like a different hen sometimes. I'll change my yelp on my mouth call. I'll go from a less raspy hen. I'll do a rollover yelp instead of a front end, whatever, and give the illusion that's a different hen coming from a different direction. And that can sometimes, see, we could get so far into detail with all these different variables and these scenarios about the repositioning. Never discount repositioning. If he leaves you and he's walking away from you, use your locators. God willing, he gobbles at your locators. Make a wide berth around him and try to get in front of him. If he's on a power line, if he's walking down a road that you're familiar with, make a big berth around him. Get up front of him and bushwhack him. I mean, we're turkey hunting. We're not. I love to call turkeys, but we're trying to kill the animal at the end of the day, the bird. So yeah. If he's moving away, get in front of him, set up, and try to identify his route if you can, and then set up in front of him and then just let him walk right by you and shoot him in the face. I mean,
there you go.
It's right? A great tactic. Yeah. It worked.
That's four turkeys, Scott. Four turkeys we got.
We're four for four. This is going to be, we're going to have to be careful because the DNR is going to be called on us, dude.
Yep. That's
how it goes.
So let's dive a little deeper into that bag of tricks that you got. So we've got, we've gone through, we got a turkey that we're not going to move. We can't move. We got a bird that's just stubborn. He might be hung up with maybe a line fence, or he's just in a really good strutting zone. He's like, you need to come to me. And he's just this stubborn Tom that's not moving. What else you got?
Well, you said we already did get into that in the bag of tricks, or we want to go into fighting purrs? I mean, get advanced.
No, I want to go deeper into the fighting, the bag of tricks.
Deeper than fighting purrs? That's pretty deep. That's a pretty
What's next? What else you got?
Oh gosh. I mean, okay. So we're just talking a hung up turkey. What would be the next step if I did the things we talked about? What would I do next? Okay. We're going to pretend he doesn't have hens, because that could be one of the reasons he's hung up too.
Yes.
Could just be out there with feeding hens. So that's a whole nother podcast, talking to the hens, how to call it, shoot the hens. We're just going to pretend he's by himself and being stubborn. At that point, we're going to go into, I'll probably say some Jake yelps at him. Honestly, just throw some Jake yelps at him. And this is really advanced. This is getting way out of 101 stuff here. I mean, it's hard not to. I think we covered
it. It is. Yeah. I mean, 101, honestly, 101 is what? For me, it's owl hooting. Find them.
Yeah.
And then most guys are going to cluck and they're going to yelp. And that's, yeah.
And gave them, like, the scenarios. Yeah. Off the roost. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, I think this, though, sorry. Yeah, let's get dirty, man. Let's get down in there. I'm here for it. And I know people listen to this are going to be like, oh yeah, let's go.
So I'm going to, before I get into fighting purrs and gobbling at him or staging, you know, with the wings and staging a fight, what I'm going to do, and I'll demonstrate it, is I'm going to do some real honking, deep, slow Jake yelps. And then I'll answer my Jake with a hen. And I think In my mind, I'm creating the illusion that some Jakes have slipped in his back door with this hen he's been talking to for, we'll call it 30, 45 minutes, an hour. And he's like, wait a minute, why is the juvenile sliding in my back door on this woman I've been trying to court for an hour? So anyway, then a Jake Yelp for the people listening. Again, I'll try to get it back to 101 as we're going advanced. Jake Yelp is a Jake yelping like a hen, but it's going to be a deeper, more honking, slower rhythm type call. And you'll hear the difference because I'll do them both on the same call, and you'll hear the honk, and then you'll hear me get higher pitched and choppier with the hen yelp. So I'll throw some Jake yelps out there, some deep clucks with it. There's a hen answering. And there you go. You can clearly hear that choppy, slower rhythm, that honky sound almost, if you will.
Honking. Yeah, the way that I describe it, it's like a yelp, but it's elongated is the easiest
elongated
way
and deeper and slower. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
a great tactic. And I've had them break and come walk into like, whoa, 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 and come not necessarily running in, but have them break and walk right in after just doing that. And again, people, none of this is gospel. Okay. Let's just be clear here. All these tactics and all these, what I call my bag of tricks, are just trying something when something else isn't working. And sometimes it works. Doesn't always work, but when it does and you have enough tricks and you can throw enough at them, many times one of those tricks, one of those tactics, those call sequences, moving, repositioning strategies, something you can do that's different that you move on to in your bag of tricks, your playbook, if you will work. And if you only sit there and you know how to yelp and that's it, you don't know how to move, you don't know how to, you know, reposition, you know how to do all these fighting purrs, all this stuff, you're handcuffing yourself. I mean, you can still get out there and enjoy yourself in the turkey woods. I'm not faulting anybody for whatever level of calling or hunting ability they have or don't have. I'm just saying the more you get better at it, the more you get versatile with your calls and your turkey knowledge, the more chance you have for success. It's just that simple.
You're good. It's more fun too. I mean, the more things is a turkey hunter that you know how to do, you're going to have more interactions with them. And it may not be, you know, it may not lead to pulling the trigger more often, but you're going to have more interactions with them. And that's a lot of fun. And honestly, man, I think one of the funnest turkey interactions, we won't touch much on it, is when you start talking to the hens, because that can be of fun.
That's as fun as hearing one gobble. Yeah, I love talking to the girls.
They'll
teach you a lot. Yeah, they teach you so much if you just listen to them and how they react and how when you hear hens interacting with a gobbler and how they talk to him and when they cut at him and when they get in their little pecking order and they're getting pissy with each other and they start doing fighting purrs because they're establishing pecking order and the gobbler's over there just showing out doing his thing and the girls are all fighting over him basically trying to figure out who's dominant, who's the boss, you know. But anyways, we're always going off on tangents, man. I'm really bad about it because there's so much to talk about, it seems like. But Jake yelps. No, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, so from there, I mean, if that doesn't work, it doesn't break him again, give him a couple doses of those Jake yelps and hen answering. Nothing happens, then I'm probably going to stage a fight would be my next tactic. And I wish I had my wings. I don't have my wings in here to simulate the, because I take the two wings and beat them together. Like, the, you know, I'm clapping, but you can, it's like they're slapping each other with their wings. And then I'll do a fighting purr. And a fighting purr is a long, aggravated contending purr, if you will. A contending purr is a very, that slow purrs that I was doing early in the show. Very slow and soft. And then the fighting purr is a drug out longer version of it. It's happening when hens or gobblers are fighting and they're excited, they're aggravated, if you will. And again, I use the wing beats to simulate the turkey noise. And then I use what I'm fixing to do for the fighting purrs on a mouth call to stage a fight. And it's like they hear the wings, they hear the fighting purrs, and they're like, what in the world's going on? What happens when two people get into a fist fight? What happens? 9 out of 10 times.
But
if there's a lot of people around, what happens?
They start filming it and putting it on Facebook.
They start running to it. They start, yeah, they start running to it. Oh, fight, 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 fight. Yeah. And I think that's what happens with turkeys. They're, you know, they're such social creatures that it's the same type of scenario. But so I'll get some fine perch for you. And I'll do a little sequence like I would do my wings. Okay, and that's a shorter sequence. I'll take a bigger breath and keep it, maybe drag it out longer, and then I'll start. And I'm the whole time I'm beating those wings together, like, and it just it's can be deadly. And I will say this to add to the fighting purr: if you're in a position to be able to use those wings, and I'll give you, if you go to my show Hunt Quest, people, there's one of the videos that say, do fighting purrs really work? Go watch that video. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. If you're in a position where you can use those wings. And actually the bird can see where you're at, but you won't, but you're covered now. And this is where it worked for me. I was guiding and filming my hunter, and I was behind my camera with my camo netting around my tripod. I was able to do those fighting purrs with the sound, and I will get those wings just above the edge of that netting. And all they see is the feathers flipping and flopping and making the noise. A turkey will come out of his skin. It's almost unfair. It almost is unfair. If you're in like an open terrain, where they can see that movement, and you cannot spook them by doing that movement. But you have to be concealed. You have to be almost behind like a palmetto blind if you're in Florida, where you could get the wings above the palmettos a little bit, or if you were, you know, using camo netting, those little blinds that you can roll out in front of you. You have to be very careful. That's one of those things you got to be careful with. But it's almost unfair. It really is. But that's the next thing I'm going to do. And just the audio of that still has broke many, many birds for me over the years. Just hearing the wings and hearing those fighting purrs will still break turkeys and get them to come. So we've done Jake yelping now. I don't have a tube call to gobble. I can halfway gobble in a mouth call, but I'm not going to do it. I wish I'd have brought my tube call in here, Paul, but no worries. Everybody knows what the gobble sounds like, even if the guys just start turkey hunting. So
if my kids weren't asleep, I would gobble for us. But they're right above the bed. That's one.
Oh god, so. Yeah, my cheap cold. Yeah, I should have brought it in here. I didn't think about it, but I didn't know that we'd be talking these kind of tactics, honestly. But if that does not work, I will probably gobble at him. And give him a couple, three or four gobbles, and then I'll answer my gobbles with my hand that he's been hearing. Again, making him giving the illusion that gobbler slipped in his back door. And, you know, trying to steal his hand that he's been talking to. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's just another one of those tricks. After that, I mean, those are some of the really nasty, dirty tricks. I mean, there's a lot more we go into. I don't run decoys, so there's a whole nother level of stuff that I'm not going to bring into the equation that people are doing with a lot of success, and I'm just not going to cover those. But as far as vocalizations and then repositioning, as you said earlier, that I may do that after I give my vocalization tactics, give all of my advanced stuff that I can do, clucking and purring, soft stuff, going quiet, gobbler yelping, or gobbler slash Jake yelping, fighting purrs. And then at that point, I'm probably going to move on that bird, try to do something from a different angle, try to figure out why he's hung up and you know, open the playbook and try something different. If that doesn't work at some point, I might leave that bird alone. I mean, if he's gobbling and you're on public land, there's a good chance somebody's right around the corner or is also on him, unless you just you're able to get away from people, which is hard to do, as you well know. So your options are more limited on public land. If you're on private land and you've got opportunities to, you know, other birds, yeah, leave that bird come back and, you know, after lunch and then try, or that afternoon, and see if that bird isn't right back in that area. I've done that many, many times. I've done it on public land as well. Come back if I thought that bird would not be molested while I left him. Yeah, I came back on public and private ground and caught them right in the gun range. It's like their whole mood changed. They felt like they got left. And then they're come back in that area looking for that hen they left behind. So I think we covered a whole bunch of good stuff there.
We did. That was good. And so I think that the number one thing that the new turkey hunter really needs to focus in on calling is, one, practice before the season. Don't do it in your truck on the way, you know, to your right, first
that morning of opening morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Practice, whether it's a mouth call, a box call, a pot call, a tube call, practice and two, and this is the beauty of turkey hunting for me, is all of the nuance that comes with it, because you could do everything. And if a turkey's not ready to die, they ain't going to die. There's literally nothing as a turkey hunter that we can do if the time isn't right. If that, and it's funny when I've been taking more new hunters into the woods with me. And, you know, a couple of years ago, one asked me, he said, what are we looking for out here? I'm like, well, we're looking for the turkey that's ready to die. That's what we're looking for. That's our whole mission, is to find the one. We might find 10 turkeys, but if none of them are ready to die, that ain't the turkey we're looking for. Well, so,
right. And now that said, all of this stuff that we've gotten a lot more advanced than we originally intended to, but that's the stuff that will make him do something he might not necessarily want to do. That's now, granted, if it is not his day, it ain't his day. It doesn't matter what you do, how good you call, it doesn't. But all of these tricks that we've been talking do make a difference, and they will kill birds when your basic stuff would have never gotten it done. Just don't.
I think for me, the ones that I'm like, okay, this is that Jake Yelp, that is one that, man, you can just rip a tom out of that spot that he doesn't want to come out of real fast. And the fight and purr, I've done that. I've never killed a bird off of it. I've done it. I've gotten them to move in a little closer. And that's what you're looking for. It's just that, it's that extra little push, man. It's, Cuz Strickland talks about turkey getting wind that band, and it snaps and they just lose their mind. You know, right, so that's kind of, some of those. Good.
That's the same thing I'm saying when you're getting him really excited and shutting him down. Or shutting him down and then bringing him up and getting me excited. It's almost like a roller coaster of emotions. And that's what Cuz is talking about, winding him up till he pops. Yeah. It's the exact same thing. Yeah.
So I want to blow people's minds here. Let's do like a real quick, give me like a 5-minute masterclass on advanced mouth calling tactics, practices. There's got to be something banging around in your head that, like, yeah, I want to talk about this, but this is the spot. What do you got? Something that's real good. And when I say that, I think with calling, especially mouth calling, tube calling, a caller, you can add a little inflection to the sounds. You can add urgency, if you will. What are some of the things, maybe like a desperate turkey call, is something that you're really, it's not desperation time for you, but something that might just be different that people aren't, that other hunters aren't necessarily using in the woods.
Okay. I mean, one of the things to keep in mind about how we're talking about you said inflection, and this is easier done on a mouth call to me than any other call. But turkeys show their mood change by volume and rhythm and pitch. Volume, rhythm, and pitch. I'm just shooting this right off the hip, and as I'm saying, I'm thinking, they get loud when they get excited. They get soft when they get content. When they're aggravated, they get loud. They get faster, choppier, louder. A contented purr versus a fighting purr. Cutting versus clucking, and the rhythm falls into play with, you have fast cutting, and then you have, again, just walking through the woods clucking. You have excited yelping, fast, higher pitched yelping. She's showing excitement, so she's yelping faster. Remember, volume, rhythm, and pitch. And she'll get louder and pingier when she's cutting super hard, and she might get higher pitched yelping because she's yelping with more inflection. She's more excited, or she's yelping contented, and she's just not showing much emotion. So those three things is things to think about. Volume, cadence, and pitch is the things to think about, how you can put that inflection in a box call. Again, it's harder to do pitch changes in a slate or a pot call in a box call. A little harder to do that, but you can do it with rhythm and with volume at least.
Yeah.
You can press hard on a box call, harder on a slate, but it doesn't always equate to more realism. I mean, it'll the call will squeak out. It doesn't sound correct. Mouth calls, you put more tongue pressure, you can, in my opinion, get a little more realism, and you can put that inflection a little bit easier with just a little more tongue pressure. So there's a really, really advanced something that people probably never, I don't know if I've ever heard anybody talk about it. How are turkeys showing their emotions?
Yeah.
Through rhythm or cadence and pitch, or volume, cadence, and pitch. Yep. And outside of that, I mean, what's some, you said master class. Gosh, you put me on the spot on that one, brother.
Pressure,
practice,
buddy.
Practice, listen to turkeys. The app has real turkeys doing the sounds. It has me doing the sounds. And then you can record yourself doing the sounds and then play it along with turkeys doing the sounds or me doing the sounds. You can stream it, or what would be the synchronize it with the sounds that of the actual wild birds doing the sounds. And you can listen to yourself as the birds are playing as well, actual turkeys or me, whatever. And you can go, where do I stand with that, you know, a really good caller. I'm not being, you know, arrogant. I'm saying a good caller and then actually a wild bird. And ultimately you should compare yourself to the birds before me. I'm just saying you still have a baseline with me in there and the turkeys in there. You have two baselines. And just be proficient on more than one kind of call. You never know when you go from a mouth call to a pot call can change. That's something we did not do. And I have to go backwards now. I'm tired. It's been a long day. My mind is numb from work today. I'll be honest with you. But that said, something I got to demonstrate, we're going backwards, but we're doing the master class here, is changing the sound of the hen itself can completely be a game changer.
Yeah, we mentioned that. We did touch on that. Yeah, let's do that with the same call.
With the same call, with a mouth call, harder to do in a box or a pot style call. Tube call, I can do it very well. But so there's three basic types of hen yelps, and I'm going to teach them to you guys in a crash course. I'm going to demonstrate them. I'm not going to teach them. I'm just going to demonstrate them. It's too hard. We don't have enough time. We've been on this for an hour and 15 already. You have a front end yelp, which is basically mostly front end and almost no rasp in the back. You hear hens at a real high pitch like that, and they almost have no back end. And I'll demonstrate that yelp. This is a front end yelp, almost no rasp. Real high pitch, real pretty, real clean, just a little hazy back end. That's the front end yelp, more front end than back end. Now we're going to do what I call a transition yelp, and this is the hen I use. This is my go-to hen, and it has a smaller front but a bigger, nastier back end, and this is called a transition yelp. You'll hear me start it, you'll hear the little high, and then you'll hear just a little bit of high in the front of each note, and you'll hear it break into the back end. This is a transition yelp. This is what I've been doing on the podcast the whole time. Last but not least is the rollover yelp. And this is where you hear a hitch in the middle of it. You hear the high, and you're going to hear a little click, a little hitch right in the middle of it. And this is going to be called a rollover yelp. And that's a rollover yelp. And that's, so what I'm saying is, what we didn't talk about when that bird was hung up, when I completely just slipped my mind, was say I'm doing the transition yelp, I'm doing this. And then I completely go higher pitch and take all the rasp out. So I'm going to do the two different hens side by side in sequence so you can hear the differences. So hopefully they can hear it recorded well and you can hear those two hens. But what I'm saying is, to change it up, go away from that hen that did not work and you couldn't get him to commit with, and go and change that voice. And that's a lot. I teach this in my DVDs, which we have not mentioned, that you can order at Scott Ellis Turkey Hunting, ScottEllisHunting.com. I don't know my own websites. Mouth Call Magic 1 and 2. Mouth Call Magic teaches all three of those hen yelps, and I do it on a bat wing, a split V, a combo cut, and a ghost cut. I teach all three hen yelps on the four major mouth call cuts, and it gives you three completely different hen turkeys. So Mouth Call Magic 1 and 2, ScottEllisHunting.com. Check them out. Great DVDs. If you still have a DVD player or an Xbox, you can play it on the Xbox, whatever. But that versatility with a mouth call, and that's why I was bringing up the DVDs, because not everybody can do that. And it takes a lot of practice to master completely changing your mechanics to make a different hen sound. It takes a lot of practice. But what the average guy could do that doesn't take mouth calling advanced, have a pot call, have a box call, have a mouth call. And what did I say about 10 minutes ago? Be proficient in all three of them. So yeah. If you can't change it up just with a mouth call, you can pull your box call out and run it. If that don't work, pull your pot call, run it. There's another trick in your little bag of tricks. Another trump card, if you will.
Man, this is big good. Last thing, 60 seconds or less, Scott. Give me the number one advice that you give to a new turkey hunter.
Be patient. I'm done.
There you go. That's the number one answer. I've asked six different people that for the show. That's the same answer. Everyone says patience kills turkeys.
Don't get in a hurry. No. Don't get up too quick. Patience can be applied to many different facets of the hunt. Sit on that. You're the one that's longer.
Sorry, I didn't mean cut you off. The one thing that's overlooked with discipline, and you mentioned, or is discipline. You mentioned that in the earlier in the show. Discipline also kills turkeys.
Right. Well, and that's where I was kind of going with the. I was kind of patience, discipline, meaning be patient when you're calling. Don't. It kind of falls into a lot of different categories. Be patient with the bird. Let him work. Let him do his thing without you completely overcalling him, harassing him, just beating him to death with yelping and cutting and yelping and cutting. Be patient. Be patient before you get up and move and you change your setup. Sit longer. Sit all day. I've sat in spots for 4 or 5 hours in his blind call. Blind calling is a whole another podcast, man. I mean, I have tons of theories on blind calling versus running and gunning. I kill turkeys both ways. I've killed a pile of them both ways. But as of late, the last decade, 15 years, I'm killing more turkeys setting up in places I know that hold turkeys and blind calling. And that's a whole, it's another 20 minutes for me, another 20 minute dissertation that I don't really want to even, we'll save it for another podcast if you want. But
Scott, sorry.
Oh, no, it's all right. I was and just know your equipment, man. Another great tactic or tip. Know your equipment. Know the limitations of your shotgun, pattern your shotgun. Know what it'll do, how far you can shoot it. Carry a rangefinder so that you know your limitations. I take a rangefinder just like I bow hunt deer, and I shoot trees, and I find my yardages knowing where my gun is, how effective it is, how far it's effective. Sorry, I just had to throw that in there. It's overlooked all the time.
It is, for sure. Scott, where can people find you on social media or the internet?
Absolutely. Hunt Quest with Scott Ellis is the Facebook fan page. Give us a like. I'm always putting up some good content. I'm going to be doing live feeds here in the coming weeks. I'm going to put some memes out there talking about the dates and times, and we're going to do Q&As. I do a lot of Q&As and answer questions as I go and demonstrate calls and stuff. It's a lot of fun. On Instagram is Scott _C_Ellis, or you can type in Hunt Quest. I think it comes up. Find my hunting show, Hunt Quest, on YouTube. Just type in Hunt Quest with Scott Ellis. It's on YouTube. Was in a weird position last year, in between jobs, had some stuff going on. Didn't get to hunt as much, didn't get to film as much. Got 6 or 8 episodes coming out for Hunt Quest. Not as many as I'd like to have. I like to have at least a dozen, 15 good hunts, but, wasn't in the cards last year, but I do have some shows coming out here in the next couple weeks. And I think that's I'm on TikTok under Scott Ellis, I think, on TikTok, but I don't engage with TikTok here. My son's like, Dad, you got to do that TikTok thing. I'm telling you, you can get a lot more viewership on that. But, and ScottEllisHunting.com, you can get Hunt Quest t-shirts and you can buy my DVDs there. And check out my signature models with Woodhaven, WoodhavenCustomCalls.com. Check out Apex Ammunition, which would be ApexMunition.com. We all know Mossy Oak.com. I love my Mossy Oak camouflage and I love my thermocell. I don't go anywhere without my thermocell as I'm hunting. In the earlier spring and the colder climates, it's usually not an issue, but here in the Southeast, they're worth their weight in platinum. So
I bought a thermocell a couple years ago. I don't know how I hunted without one, honestly, man. I mean, those things are amazing.
I look back at my childhood and I don't know. I just don't know how we did it. I think we used DEET. I think it was DEET. Or a can of off every time you went in the woods because the mosquitoes. And I mean, I grew up in Florida, dude. I mean, you can only imagine how bad mosquitoes are here. So
Yeah. Good deal. Well, Scott, thanks so much for your time, man. I'll see you in Nashville here in a couple weeks at the NWTF convention, and hopefully we get to share the turkey woods together at some point here in the future. So, Scott, thanks for your time, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I had a blast. We'll do it again. Take care.
Sounds good. Yep.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.